We are in Daniel chapter 7 today. Thank you for hanging in there as we work through the book of Daniel. It's got 12 chapters. We're in chapter 7. As I mentioned last week, we had finished up the historical narrative. The first six chapters of Daniel were about Daniel's life in exile in Babylon. And as we said last week, empires came and empires went. It started with Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians, and then it moved into the Persians with Cyrus the Great being in charge. Despite the rise and fall of the greatest kingdom in the world at that time, God still worked his plan. Daniel was still blessed and had an influence on what was going on there. So now we come to Daniel chapter 7, and things change a little bit. Listen to this, verse 1. Earlier, during the first year of King Belshazzar's reign in Babylon, Daniel had a dream and saw visions as he lay in his bed, and he wrote down the dream, and this is what he saw. Now, it says earlier. So what's happening here is we're going back to an earlier point in Daniel's life. Now, he's still an old man here, and what we can figure out, we can almost get the date exact, because in the next chapter, it says his second dream, because he has four dreams, the second one happens in the third year that that Belshazzar is reigning. And we know when Belshazzar started his reign, it was in 550 BC. So this first dream that we're looking at here in chapter 7 was either in 550 BC or 549 BC. Right? So Babylon is still the world power, but it is declining. After Nebuchadnezzar, it starts to decline. The Greek Empire is starting to build. It's going from city-states, and it's starting to congeal into a bigger empire, and they will eventually take over. But right now, Persia is the one knocking at the gates, and as we said, Persia comes in and conquers Babylon without even a battle. Remember, we talked about them going under the wall through the river to get in there. Other things are happening in the world. Buddha will be born soon. Confucius will be born, all during sort of the time of Daniel in this exile. So we know this is around 550 or 549 BC. And what's interesting, as I mentioned last week as a teaser, up to this point, Daniel's been able to interpret the dreams for the kings. But now Daniel has his own dream, and it confuses him. It says this, "In my vision that night, I, Daniel, saw a great storm churning the surface of a great sea, with strong winds blowing from every direction. Then four huge beasts came up out of the water, each different from the others." Now, you're going to see that these beasts represent the four kingdoms that Nebuchadnezzar also dreamed about. Do you remember when we started this whole journey in Daniel? I said there's a chiastic form here, a literary form, that chapters 2 through 7 line up. So if I explain this, I should have made a picture. You've got Daniel chapter 1. Then think of it this way, Daniel chapter 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So a chiastic form of literature, in the center of the book is the main theme. So you had 2, 3, 4, and in there was this main theme of God is in control of all the kingdoms. And then you have 5, 6, 7. So 4 and 5 have similar stories. And then 3 and 6 have similar stories, and 2 and 7 have similar stories. So they're branching out from the main theme. So in chapter 2, Nebuchadnezzar had his dream of this statue that represented these four coming kingdoms. Here, Daniel has a dream about these four kingdoms as well, although his looks a little bit different. Now, if you'll remember, Nebuchadnezzar's dream had this statue, and it had the head, the breast, the legs, and it represented these kingdoms. For Daniel, it's beasts coming out of the ocean. And I sort of ponder that. I'm like, okay, well, if they're both having a dream about the same thing, why is Nebuchadnezzar dreaming a statue and Daniel's dreaming about these beasts? Well, John MacArthur, a very well-known pastor in California, thought of it this way, and it kind of hit me. Something I learned this week. Nebuchadnezzar, as a pagan king, as a man, saw those kingdoms as glorious, man building these kingdoms. So of course he would see them as a statue glorifying man. Daniel, a man of God, looking through God's eyes, who is in exile right now, whose people was taken away, sees those kingdoms not as glorious, but as destructive, as monsters, working their way across the world. So we have two dreams about the same thing, but very different perspectives. Now you'll notice in here that Daniel describes them through the use of animals. That's the imagery he uses, although they are not normal animals. They have some attributes of animals we know, so that's what he uses to describe them, but understand they are monsters. They are beasts that he sees. The first beast was like a lion with eagle's wings. As I watched, its wings were pulled off, and it was left standing with its two hind feet on the ground, like a human being, and it was given a human mind. Now, this first empire alludes to the Babylonians, right? The empire that Daniel is under right now, where he's in exile. Do you remember in our, I believe it was our first message, we looked at some of Babylon and some of its ancient treasures, and one of those things was the Ishtar Gate, this beautiful gate made out of this blue stone, looked like lapis lazuli. And do you remember what images were on the stones? They were winged lions. So here we think that's what this alludes to. This first kingdom, this first beast is Babylon. And truly it was great. It was ferocious like a lion. And yet it says here the wings were pulled off and it stood like a man and was given a human mind. I think that alludes to when Nebuchadnezzar lost his mind. Remember, he was all puffed up with his own glory. So God had him lose his mind literally, and he went out in the field and grazed like cattle until he finally repented and God restored him. So this first beast represents Babylon. Then I saw a second beast, and it looked like a bear. It was rearing up on one side, and it had three ribs in its mouth between its teeth. And I heard a voice saying to it, "Get up, devour the flesh of many people." I believe this one represents the Medo-Persian kingdom that came next, that took over after Babylon. Because it was the Medo-Persian kingdom, the Persians actually were the main rulers. The Medes were there, but they didn't have the power the Persians did. And I think that's why it says one side of the bear reared up, because the Persians were greater than the Medes. And it had the three ribs in its mouth, were probably the other kingdoms that it had taken over. And it says, go out and feed on many people. The Persian kingdom expanded beyond what the Babylonian kingdom was. It was huge. Then the third of these strange beasts appeared, and it looked like a leopard. It had four bird's wings on its back and had four heads. Great authority was given to this beast. Now, after the Persian Empire fell, who took over next? Do you remember? The Greeks. Thank you. Very good. I owe you a candy bar. Who was that? No, you don't get a candy bar. Okay, so I'll get you. The Greeks rose to power, especially Alexander the Great. Now, remember, there were a lot of years that went through this, but for Alexander, he was the son of Philip of Macedon II, and Alexander conquered the known world by the time he was 32. He did this in a very short span. It was about 12 years during his reign, because he took over the kingdom when he was 20, and in 12 years, he conquered all of Asia and a major part of Europe. So this kingdom expanded beyond any of the other superpowers, and it was lightning fast like a leopard. That's how Alexander took over. Now, what's with the four heads that are or the four horns that are involved here? Well, Alexander, when he was 32 at the height of his power, contracted a disease and died. Now, some think maybe he was poisoned by some of his generals. We don't know. But he died at age 32 with this huge empire, the biggest ever known in the world. Well, what happened to that empire? Four of his generals took over the areas they commanded. Now, this is well after Daniel lived. This is about 200 years, about 250 years after Daniel has this dream. And yet it plays out exactly the way he said. So Alexander, like a leopard moving faster, a cheetah, conquers all this territory, then dies, and these four horns or four generals rise up and take over. And we don't get that just from the Bible. That's in history books. That is well known. So that is the Greeks. Then in my vision that night, I saw a fourth beast, terrifying, dreadful, and very strong. It devoured and crushed its victims with huge iron teeth and trampled their remains beneath its feet. It was different from any of the other beasts, and it had 10 horns. So who's this fourth empire? The Romans. Thank you, bro. You're not getting a second candy bar. One is all you get. Okay, yeah, yeah. It's like that caveat on the radio. If you've ever won a contest before, you're not eligible again. No, yeah, nice try. It'll be a big bar. Yeah. The iron kind of gives it away a little bit, right? Because the Romans had all that iron armor on. And they were ferocious. And they conquered even more territory than the Greeks. They united the world as it was known back then. Their reign lasted about 1,500 years. Whereas the previous kingdoms at most had lasted 200 years. But for 1,500 years, the Romans were in charge of the world for the most part. As I was looking at the horns, suddenly another small horn appeared among them. Three of the first horns were torn out by its roots to make room for it. This little horn had eyes like human eyes and a mouth that was boasting arrogantly. So that's the fourth beast. Now, it gets a little weird there, doesn't it, with the 10 horns. And we're going to get into more detail about that later. But for now, understand it was the Roman Empire. Now, after all these empires come and go, Daniel's dream changes, and he sees heaven. It says, I watched as thrones were put in place, and the Ancient One sat down to judge. Now, the Ancient One, obviously we're talking about God. Ancient doesn't probably just mean old, but means eternal. The Eternal One. His clothing was as white as snow, his hair like purest wool. He sat on a fiery throne with wheels of blazing fire, and a river of fire was pouring out, flowing from his presence. Millions of angels ministered to him. Many millions stood to attend him. Then the court began its session, and the books were opened. This blows me away, this picture of heaven that Daniel is seeing. And this first dream he has is more panoramic than the rest. It goes from the beginning to end. As we get into his other dreams, it'll go over specific times, so you'll get more details. So if you get confused today, don't worry. The other details are coming. But this picture of heaven is amazing. God on his throne, the fire coming out. In other scripture, we know there's lightning. There are creatures there crying, holy, 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 24 hours a day. And what I love about that is it changes my perspective, because I don't know if you're like me or not, but sometimes I go through life and I think, you know, when I get to heaven, I'm going to ask God some questions, right? Okay, what was the deal with mosquitoes? We really need those. Why did the Eagles only win one Super Bowl? Okay. Yeah, thank you, Dennis. Yeah. What? Be quiet, Cowboys fan. And I say that in the singular because I believe you are the only one. I heard they had one. Now we know. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, candy bar just shrank down, really. You know, why did my car break down with all the kids in it that one year and couldn't start it again? Yeah, that was a bad day. But you know what? I think when I get to heaven, I'm going to forget all those questions. And all I'm going to be able to say is, there he is. There's my God. And I'm going to fall in and worship him like the millions of angels that are doing the same. Yeah, how about face to face? That just scares me and is wonderful all at the same time, right? A face that's so bright, it's brighter than any light you've ever seen. His goodness, his holiness, his perfection just comes out of him and you're in awe. Remember when one of the prophets saw that and as soon as he saw God's face, he said, I'm ruined because he saw his own imperfections. So when I get up there, those questions are not going to matter. All I'm going to be able to say is, there he is. There's my Savior sitting on the throne. I cannot wait. So here Daniel has this beautiful vision of heaven. And it says, I continued to watch because I could hear the little horn's boastful speech, right? This kingdom still going on. I kept watching until the fourth beast was killed and its body was destroyed by fire. The other three beasts had their authority taken from them, but they were allowed to live a little while longer. As my vision continued that night, I saw someone like a son of man coming with the clouds of heaven. Now, who could that be? Jesus. What did Jesus call himself most often? Son of man. I think when Jesus did that, he was alluding to this passage in Daniel. So we want to watch carefully what happens to the Son of Man here, because it's a prophecy of what Jesus will move into. And remember, this was about 550 years before Jesus even came to this earth that Daniel had this vision. He approached the Ancient One and was led into his presence. Remember, he came through the clouds. Clouds are often symbolic for deity. So the Son of Man is God, right? He is deity. He was given authority, honor, and sovereignty over all the nations of the world so that people of every race and nation and language would obey him. His rule is eternal. It will never end. His kingdom will never be destroyed. There's the hope. There's the promise. There's what Daniel is seeing. The kingdoms will come and go, but eventually the Son of Man will come into power. He will have the authority, King of Kings, Lord of Lords, and his kingdom will never end. That's the direct connection. It's funny, in Matthew 16, Jesus said, "For the Son of Man will come with his angels in the glory of his Father and will judge all people according to their deeds." Jesus is coming, and he is the King of Kings. Now, I, Daniel, was troubled by all I had seen, and my visions terrified me. So I approached one of those standing beside the throne and asked him what it all meant. And he explained it to me like this: "These four huge beasts represent four kingdoms that will arise from the earth. But in the end, the holy people of the Most High will be given the kingdom, and they will rule forever and ever." Then I wanted to know the true meaning of the fourth beast, the one so different from the others and so terrifying. It had devoured and crushed its victims with iron teeth and bronze claws, trampling their remains beneath its feet. I also asked about the 10 horns on the fourth beast's head and the little horn that came up afterwards and destroyed the three others. This horn had seemed greater than the others, and it had human eyes and a mouth that was boasting arrogantly. As I watched, this horn was waging war against God's holy people and was defeating them, until the Ancient One, the Most High, came and judged in favor of his holy people. Then the time arrived for the holy people to take over the kingdom. Then he said to me, "This fourth beast is the fourth world power that will rule the earth. It'll be different from all the others. It will devour the whole world, trampling and crushing everything in its path. Its 10 horns are 10 kings who will rule that empire. Then another king will arise, different from the other 10, who will subdue 3 of them." We're talking about the Antichrist here. "He will defy the Most High God and oppress the holy people of the Most High. He will try to change their sacred festivals and laws, and they'll be placed under his control for a time, times, and half a time." Explain that later. Now, you might be thinking, wait a minute, I thought the fourth kingdom was Rome, and yet this stuff hasn't come to pass yet. We haven't seen the Antichrist yet. We're not at this point, so how does this all fit together? So we're moving into what's called eschatology. Eschatology is the study of the end times, and we're going to do that through the rest of the book of Daniel. But just to give you a brief explanation right now, what I believe is going to happen, and not all scholars agree, the Roman Empire, even though it was overthrown, I think will have a revival in the future. I think Europe is going to come back together and there will be some form of the Roman Empire reborn. And I believe the Antichrist will somehow come out of that empire. There are things coming into place now that I'm watching in world politics, world culture, that start to allude to that. So I think it's very possible. So while Daniel's dream starts with history, it ends with future prediction. Once again, this first dream is the overview of everything. Future dreams will take on individual parts, and we'll get to those. But I believe this empire will grow again. This Roman Empire, it'll start somewhere in Europe, and it will take over. And there will be hard times for believers. Did you see that in here? Right? There will be an oppression of God's people, and it will be hard. But it says that's only for a time, and then God will rule in favor, and our King of Kings and Lord of Lords will take over. Right, that's what it says, verse 26. It continues, "But then the court will pass judgment, and all his power, the Antichrist, will be taken away and completely destroyed. Then the sovereignty, power, and greatness of all the kingdoms under heaven will be given to the holy people of the Most High. His kingdom will last forever, and all rulers will serve and obey him." That was the end of the vision I, Daniel, saw. I was terrified by my thoughts, and my face was pale with fear, but I kept these things to myself. We'll get into the rest later, but just understand this. Daniel was terrified. Because remember, Daniel himself is still in exile. Right? So his people have been taken away from their home. They were God's holy people. And yet they were taken away because of their sin. So now Daniel has this dream and he sees these beasts. He thinks, what is going on? But the whole idea behind this was to give hope. Yes, Daniel, you're going to see these things happen. These world powers are going to come and go. Things are going to look terrible, but God's in control. Jesus Christ will be on the throne. He will be the ultimate ruler. Satan doesn't want that. And in the meantime, Satan is going to use everything he can to scare you into thinking God's not in control. Maybe God doesn't even exist. Maybe it was a bunch of baloney. And yet as we look at archaeology and as we look at the future coming together, we see that everything written is playing out perfectly. Daniel has these visions 5 centuries before Christ even comes on the scene. He has them 2.5 centuries before Alexander the Great is on the scene. And yet we see history play out exactly as Daniel had dreamt it. But Satan will try and scare you, and that's why these things were written, that you would understand. You won't understand it all, but you know enough that you won't be drawn away. When I was in the sales field, I was an internet engineer, and we sold complex business solutions to the Fortune 1000, you know, big companies like Microsoft, Kodak, etc. And part of the reason we sold that was we kept their computers working online. When you go to a computer on the internet, I mean, that's really what you're doing. You're not just in some nebulous cloud. There's computers somewhere that you are connected to. Well, for a company to keep running, you got to make sure those computers are always running. So we guaranteed 5 nines of uptime. What that meant was we guaranteed that a company's computers ran 99.999% of the time. Only company to offer that. 1/3 of all internet traffic went through our data centers somewhere in the world. Now, why don't you know that? You don't know that because we don't want you to know that, because then we become a target, right? So we were around during 9/11 and all that stuff, and we really thought that our infrastructure was going to be hit next. Because if you knock out the financials, the trading, and all that, like Merrill Lynch had all their trading in our centers, you could cause chaos. So our company was in touch with the White House on a regular basis, figuring things out. So as we sold our products, one of our sales tactics was called FUD. Fear, uncertainty, and doubt. You would go into the companies and say, are you sure your computers can keep running? What happens if the power grid goes down? What happens if there's a fire? How do you tell? And we had answers for all of that. But we would sow fear, uncertainty, and doubt so that they would come to us, you got to fix this for us. And then we charge them millions of dollars, literally. Satan's going to do the same thing. He sows fear, uncertainty, and doubt. He wants you to doubt God. He wants you to live in fear and uncertainty. But you don't have to, because you've got it right here. If you continue to study your Bible and you study the world around you, you'll find it's playing out exactly the way God said that it would. Live in that victory. Know that Jesus is your king. He's not just your friend. He is your king. And he's a conqueror, right? He conquered death. Jesus can conquer your pain. He can conquer your fear. He can conquer your past. He can conquer your regrets. He can conquer your attitude. And he certainly will conquer your enemy. Jesus is in charge. You follow the king and you live victoriously. The world's still going to go crazy. It says that here. But it's going to turn out for your good, because the King of Kings is supreme. His rule will never end. Knowing that, live your lives in a way that your citizenship is there, not here. Paul said that. You are no longer strangers and foreigners. You're citizens along with all of God's holy people. You are members of God's family. You are a citizen first and foremost of heaven. Your time is coming. Your time is here. Live that way. Father, we are grateful that you would give visions like this. They are terrifying, Lord. but in some ways they are so comforting too. Because we know despite the turmoil, Jesus will reign supreme. That your kingdom is coming. That events are planning out the way you foresaw them to be, the way you want them to be. That people might have time to know Jesus before that end time comes. That they might know salvation and hope and love in a family that never ends. Lord, as we continue to explore Daniel, help us to understand it. Help us to understand what we need to understand, and what we can't understand, may we just know that you've got, that it's covered, so that we might live in confidence and victory for you. We ask it all through Christ, who made it final through his death and resurrection on the cross.